Brought to you by North Memorial Health, where customers are treated like family. That means a big smile when you walk in the door and making sure your visit is as pleasant as possible. It's just like your family treats you. Find your healthy family at northmemorial.com/family.
Welcome to another episode of Access Vikings Podcast. My name is Andrew Kramer, joined here by Ben Gessling and Michael Rand of the Star Tribune. Hello, gentlemen.
Hello, Andrew.
Andrew, how you doing?
Doing pretty well. It's Packers week.
It is.
We upgraded, too. We got three microphones now.
Yeah, we have a new sound device mixer. What would you call it?
A six-track?
Yeah,
I guess it is a six-track. It's got four tracks.
Not an eight-track.
We're going to cut an album
microphones
later.
And then a stereo mic adapter as well.
So. We're going to like cut a full-length album after this.
Yeah, we're moving up in the world.
I don't know what the genre of music
like
be.
Fleetwood Mac, where we're like fighting with each other all night and then we record a great album. I mean, people don't need to know.
Yeah.
Who's the lead singer? Who's going to talk most? We'll find that out. You'll learn with us as we go along in this podcast. Set it up for Packers week. Early lead in the NFC North being on the line. We'll get into what a difference a full calendar year makes for these two teams, the Vikings and the Packers offenses. Looking much different in this Week 2 matchup compared to last year's Week 2 at Lambeau Field. Get into the Packers defense. A lot of changes there. We heard some praise from Mike Zimmer for this Packers defense today on Wednesday of this week, and that's pretty rare of Mike Zimmer to say of a Packers defense. You don't hear that very much. That him saying that they've been looking good, or at least
looking
good.
It's rare for Mike Zimmer to praise an opponent. That is not rare.
No. But you've always heard him praise Aaron Rodgers these weeks. It was never praising the Packers
defense.
True. And they've made a lot of changes up front. We'll let you guys know all about that. And then talk about the Vikings pass rush and how they can get after Aaron Rodgers, who was sacked five times by the Bears last week. Gentlemen, let's just start off with the kind of 10,000-foot view of this Packers-Vikings rivalry here. When's the last time the Packers beat the Vikings?
Christmas Eve 2016, I believe.
Yeah. Oh, it was that game.
Well, 17, Rodgers barely played, and then 18, it was a tie and a Vikings win. So.
That's right. So it's been two full years since I got to look back. When's the last time that happened? I should have done this research before the podcast.
Yeah, full year.
It would have been a while.
It was like 93, 94. I think I looked this up at one point last year.
Yeah, so we're a full quarter century from that happening.
Basically the beginning of the – actually, I think for it to be this many in a row, like five out of six or whatever it's been, it dates back to the run beginning before Favre got there.
Wow.
So
Dennis Green kind of owned – Holmgren for a while.
The early
part of that rivalry until Green Bay got really good in the mid-90s.
Yep. Yeah, 92, 93, 94, when they were both kind of 9-7 every year. I think the Vikings got the better of them quite a bit.
Yeah, and I'm sure Green Bay fans would say it was a little asterisk there, as you mentioned, 2017, Rodgers not being there for all but two series of that entire season against the Vikings. But overall, the Vikings have had a lot of success in the Mike Zimmer era against this Packers team, and it'll be interesting to see if they can keep it up against a Packers offense that under Matt LaFleur, new head coach, trying to install a lot of different things, a lot of similar things to what the Vikings are running here under Gary Kubiak and Kevin Stefanski. But Ben, what did you think of that Thursday night outing of the Packers in their opener and how they looked comparatively to what you've seen before?
Well, the defense certainly looked more capable. You have to couch all of this by saying that Mitchell Trubisky is not exactly a world beater back there at quarterback. But the things that they did well, I thought, I mean, they certainly got quite a bit of pressure on Trubisky and mostly did it in a way that didn't allow him a ton of places to escape, because he obviously will do that probably to a fault sometimes, a little bit of ponder in him that way. But
got chilly in here.
You know, I call him like I see him. I mentioned ponder on Sunday in a tweet too, because Cousins managed to get a win without throwing for 100 yards, which ponder did four times in his career. So anything to bring that back up was kind of fun. Just to let Vikings Twitter think about Christian Ponder was mostly the point. Great guy, but yeah.
That bursitis cleared up.
Yeah, the bursitis cleared up. It's very nice to see that happened. So the other thing I think that I noticed with the Packers defense that we haven't seen a lot. They tackled really well. I mean, that has not been a defense that tackles with any kind of consistency, and whether it's bad angles or missed tackles, that has been a problem for them an awful lot in recent years. And it was not an issue to any great degree against the Bears, which is saying a lot both on that surface and against guys like Tariq Cohen. So,
yeah.
I mean, the fact that they were doing those things better and getting consistent pressure, which they spent a lot of money to try to get.
And the rookie safety looked really good, too.
Yeah.
Well, offensively more. I was more actually curious about your thoughts offensively, Matt, and what they're doing differently with Aaron Rodgers and how they only put up, I mean, it was 10 points. And Rodgers afterwards had to say, look, I swear, he vowed, I'm going to be a lot better moving forward in this offense.
Yeah, much like you and I just did there, it seemed like they had some signals crossed. Yeah. It's funny. They go out and hire the guy from the Sean McVay tree, and all of a sudden it's an offense that can't score and a defense that is able to shut people down. I mean, I guess it's kind of like what the Vikings did on Sunday in some ways. But although I guess they scored plenty when they had short fields to work with as well, but didn't throw the ball much. It is going to be interesting to me to see how this all plays out, because the question last year was always, is it the scheme, or is it Rodgers sort of gumming up the works by saying, no, I don't like this, I'm going to do something else, and I don't trust these receivers. Mm-hmm. I don't think that was it completely, but you know, it certainly did not look like an efficient operation by any means last Thursday. And you wonder sometimes if maybe it's important to have guys play in the preseason, especially when they're part of a new offense. But that obviously has come and gone, and maybe that was their chance to knock some rust off and they'll be different. But yeah, it was quite a bit different than what we are used to seeing. It's been a long time since we've seen the Packers win a game that way, put it that way.
Have we seen much chatter out of Green Bay as to, was there a similar amount of audibling from Rodgers? Was there less, more? Because I know that was such a preseason talker, like LaFleur wanting him to kind of stay within the system, and Rodgers saying, hey, look, you know, I walk up to the line, I see things, I want to change plays. I didn't watch the game closely enough to see if he was checking out of plays with much frequency.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that either. I do know I'd read Rob Domofsky over at ESPN, because does a great job covering the Packers. He had written the week of that game that finally Rodgers admitted, yes, I'm going to have that freedom. Because I think it was kind of, as you said, kind of a tug of war over information of them in-house saying, or publicly saying, excuse me, that no, it's going to be LaFleur's offense. Rodgers is going to run everything that is called. But clearly with a veteran quarterback, 15th season, and Rodgers, you got to give him some freedom to do what he wants. And I'm sure he does have that. As
15th season already.
As Domofsky reported. Yeah, 15th season for Rodgers. 15th already. He's what, 30, yeah, that's right. 36?
36 later this year, I believe, yeah.
That's amazing. And so I remember last year, the game, I can't remember where they were.
I mean,
was
it's amazing for some people to play 15 seasons. Some people play 20 and don't even think about it.
Did you see, talk about getting on a sidetrack here, did you see Favre's comments about
play 25?
God, I got to go back and look this up now, and I'll bring it up at the end of the podcast. But Favre was commenting 30 on something and just going off, and I think it might have been about Eli Manning or something. But anyway, I'll bring that up at the end. What I was going to say is it brings me back to the New England game last year where the Vikings are, I believe, at Foxborough when Mike McCarthy got fired. I believe they were in Foxborough. I can't remember where. It was a road game somewhere.
When McCarthy got fired?
Yes.
No, I think they lost to Arizona at home. I think they
egg. No, sorry, where the Vikings were.
Oh, yeah, the first week of December?
Yes.
Yes, they were
Foxborough. It was either Seattle, Foxborough, one of the two. And Mike Zimmer was asked about it immediately after the game. Mike McCarthy got fired. What are your thoughts? And Mike Zimmer said, well, he's a good coach. It's a shame. He only said that because of how easy it was to go up against that offense every single year, right? Because we asked Mike Zimmer today, Wednesday of this week, ahead of this Packers game, asked him, look, what stands out about a Matt LaFleur system, an offense? And he said, look, it's a lot of the stuff we're running here in Minnesota, trying to install the play action, bootlegs, misdirection, all that stuff. All the stuff that's
screens.
Hard to defend, which is not what Mike McCarthy was running in Green Bay.
No.
I don't know. I wonder if it was not quite that. Part of me wonders if that was, because we've heard Zimmer talk about it a little bit.
Self-preservation.
Well, we've heard him talk about his own track record in terms of his own job security.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that came up a little bit at the end of last year, and I think he got into it a little bit with Mark Craig when they sat down a few weeks ago. And his point was, hey, I've won here. And
seemed to know a lot of his specific winning percentages.
He had that down.
He came armed with that data in that interview.
A guy that claims to not keep very close track of stats had a very specific handle on his own winning percentage.
Compared to Bud Grant, compared to all the Vikings past coaches.
You noticed that too, huh?
Yeah.
Those guys are in the ring of honor.
It is, there may be a little bit of an old school coach thing there and saying, hey, the guy had a bad year, had a couple of bad years, but look at what he's done and how much he's won. There may be a little bit of a coaching fraternity thing of people protecting each other there, too.
But I guess if you got Mike Zimmer on Truth Serum, he would probably tell you that offense was not schematically, not to say that Aaron Rodgers wasn't hard to play against, because of course he is.
That's probably true.
But schematically, that offense probably didn't keep him up at night.
There's a lot of things that I would be very curious to hear from Mike Zimmer were he on Truth Serum.
Yeah, let's work on that. We're going to work on our
Norv Turner, Kickers, Blair Walsh.
Truth Serum podcast. Yeah,
among other things.
We don't have our Truth Serum right this minute. But it is kind of an interesting matchup, right? Because you've got kind of an element of the unknown in a lot of cases. The Vikings are running a new offense. Mm-hmm. The Packers are running a new offense. The Packers' defense looks better in kind of year two of this defensive system. It might be, I mean, as weird as this to think about with how, you know, a lot of these games have played out between these teams over the years, this could be again, every week is different. This could be a pretty low-scoring game, just where these offenses are right now and how well both of the defenses looked in the first game.
Yeah, I think that's fair, too, because I can't remember if it was the Bears came. Maybe I think both teams came away from it that opening night on Thursday between the Bears and Packers, both coaches saying we needed to run the ball more. And you going into this game, you know the Vikings, what they want to do, clearly, is give the ball to Dalvin Cook. So this could be more of a running clock control, time of possession kind of matchup where if these two teams are trying to play the same kind of ball, it might not be that fun to watch.
Yeah, although it's like Mike Zimmer erotica. I mean, like last game was just like, could that have been a better Mike Zimmer game where he had everything go his way, but he could still yell at his guys for a lot of
things? His defense would have scored the four touchdowns as opposed to the offense.
Were we in the business of giving our podcast titles based on something that was said in the episode, we would have the title for this one.
Which one?
It would be this Mike episode erotica? Would be called Mike Zimmer erotica.
I like. I'm just trying to sell a lot of subscriptions.
Yes.
Promo code.
T-shirts.
Promo code Mike Zimmer erotica.
Promo code erotica may bring us some.
That's a bad one.
Maybe bring
that's
us some. Complaints.
Don't use that one.
Do not use that promo code.
Scratch that.
Don't use that one on the Star Tribune's website.
Delete that.
Still an interesting matchup.
It is. And like I opened at the top, what a difference a year makes, because I don't envision that Kirk Cousins last year, a year ago in Green Bay.
So we get a third mic and this is what happens.
Through for, yeah, everybody
it's
talks.
Falling apart.
Everybody talks too much. 425 yards and 52 dropbacks for Kirk Cousins a year ago. I cannot imagine. Now, Kirk said almost kind of sheepishly, hey, we might win a game 52-51 this year. I don't envision that happening. And if it does, Mike Zimmer might not be very happy. But going into this one, even if he has to drop back more than 10 times, which is probably going to happen, it's not going to be 52 times like it was a year ago.
It was part of a frantic comeback last year.
You're right, because they were down what at halftime?
I think they got down by two or three touchdowns.
They scored 22 fourth quarter points in that game to force overtime, missed a bunch of field goals, obviously.
They did.
And we'll get into the special teams ramifications from that a year ago and where they're at now. But in general, this is going to be a game where Dalvin Cook, I will guarantee it, if he's healthy, will touch the ball more than 13 times, which is what he touched it in almost five quarters last year.
They were down 20-7 at the end of the third quarter.
20-7.
Okay. And then they scored a bunch, kind of frantic rally. To your point though, about Cousins, even at the podium today, he was talking about, I got no interest in dropping back 50 times. He said, like, that's not how I want to win. Quarterbacks probably have some fun throwing the ball that much, but they also know that if they're in that mode, they're going to take a lot of hits. Something's probably gone wrong if they're having to throw that much because they're probably playing from behind. So I don't – somewhere between 10 and 50 is probably his optimal number. That's
what we should get into, too, a little bit about their pass protection, because, Ben, you noted this. It was only 10 dropbacks. He was 8 for 10, great passer rating, but he got hit a lot.
Yeah, I think he, according to Pro Football Focus, he was pressured like 45% of the time. And
5 out of the 11 dropbacks.
Yeah, so. Which I guess it's the phrase small sample size comes to mind. But, whether it was – and I don't think that even would include the one that – I think he had one where he got drilled that ended up coming back because of a penalty.
Yeah.
And the fumble that turned into an incomplete pass, of course, he got the ball knocked out of his hand from behind on that one and had it happen on an actual fumble later in the game as well. So, yeah, a lot of pressure around both edges last week and some up the middle too. I mean, Garrett Bradbury had some tough moments with Grady Jarrett and Pat Elflein, who was not practicing today, also had some difficult moments. They had a tough time with Grady Jarrett overall and certainly could have a tough time with Kenny Clark on Sunday as well. So they have to do a better job of protecting him, I think, than they did last week, or they could be in some trouble.
Is it concerning? Sorry, now that we have these three microphones, it's just a beautiful thing.
We got to work out the show flow again.
Is it concerning?
My ball. No, it's my ball.
Is it concerning, again, small sample size, but given how well they were running the ball and kind of how surprising throwing should have been in those scenarios that they did give up that many pressures? Or is that still just 5 out of 11 is too much to draw any conclusions?
I have to go back and look at what the down and distance was when they threw it.
What I think it's more of a cumulative effect. It's more the fact that we know they weren't good at this last year, and the small sample.
I didn't talk about that at all last year.
In the small sample size that they displayed in this game, they didn't inspire a ton of confidence, I don't think, in their pass. Now, Atlanta's pass rush it's pretty decent. They've invested a lot of top picks, two first rounders in Vic Beasley and Tack McKinley, and then of course Grady Jarrett's one of the great interior rushers in the NFL. So with that, I just think you're going to face that almost every week. Now this week in Green Bay is going to be Za'Darius Smith, who's very much on their radar as a guy they have to shut down. And then Preston Smith, and of course, as Ben mentioned, Kenny Clark. Now, they got rid of Mike Daniels, but Kenny Clark has been giving this interior line fits for 2 years now. And Za'Darius Smith is one of the best edge rushers in the NFL, and he didn't get that billing because he was in a Baltimore system that I don't think featured him a ton, but he had 8.5 sacks last year. I think, did he have 10 pressures against the Bears?
Yeah, I believe so.
And the Bears' offensive line is not a bunch of pushovers.
No.
They're fairly decent. So to me, this Packers pass rush is going to be worrisome if they don't get out to an early lead. And that's just going to be the key to this Vikings team the whole year, is getting that early lead so you can kind of control how you want to dictate
that. Well, and when you want to run the ball and you're built with a good pass rush on defense, I mean, that's certainly going to be the preferred way to play. I mean, anybody that has a good pass rush wants to get a big lead so they can, those guys don't have to worry about defending the run. So, I mean, yeah, that's going to be part of it, but they are going to have to win more than one way, and that has not been something they've been very good at. I mean, they've always been built. In this is my eighth season covering the team. I think almost the entire time, whether it was because they wanted Adrian Peterson to gain a ton of yards and run out clock, or because they wanted their defense to be able to go to work, this has always been a team that's been built to play pretty well with a lead. Obviously, every team prefers to play with a lead, but it has not been one that is terribly effective at coming from behind or even playing in a game where they have to trade possessions and trade touchdowns. So, I mean, if you get into a game where you have to do that, I mean, the best example of them showing they can do it probably was here last year in week two when they were able to. But
the Rams game, they got close.
Yeah.
Tried.
Yeah. I mean, they have had moments where they show that. But you, I mean, like Cousins said, if you get into a game, and maybe it's not 52-51, but 31-28 kind of thing, there could be a moment or two of that at some point this year. And you're probably going to need to show you can win that way as well.
In the second half of last year, they got into a bunch of those trail early games against the better teams in the second half, and they did not come back. That was when Cousins was getting particularly pummeled.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, and I just saw the cumulative effects of the pressure on Cousins. I mean, I remember last year thinking so many times, wow, he's getting hit, making great throws. End of the year, you weren't seeing him kind of stand in the pocket that way with that same poison presence, probably because he had felt those hits so many times earlier in the years. Well, let's talk about the Vikings defense and what they're probably going to be without Mackenzie Alexander. That would be
who said that?
Dislocated his elbow Sunday. Ben reports he at least gets to avoid surgery. The MRI came back decently enough. Mike Zimmer confirmed that today by saying it was a good MRI for Mackenzie, but it's still going to be a week to week.
It might have just been that, you know, the techs were nice. Yeah, some people get claustrophobic in those machines.
Oh, you mean like it just went smoothly, the MRI, didn't freak out?
The elevator music was nice, relaxing. I don't know.
In all seriousness, though, you reported it's not going to need surgery, which means he's not going to go on injured reserve.
Correct.
Which means it's less than an 8-week injury, but it's still going to be a week-to-week injury with McKenzie. That is a tough one right out of the gate. Because Mike Hughes, the other slot corner, still coming back from that knee injury, is yet to play. We'll see if he has a chance to play this week. If not, it's going to be Jayron Kearse.
Oh, he has a chance.
If not, as Mike Zimmer likes to say, if not, it's going to be Jayron Kearse in that slot. And Ben, as we've talked about before, we know Rodgers is going to go after the guy that is the weak link in the chain.
He does have a history of doing that. And I guess one of the things that's helped the Vikings in recent years is they haven't had as many obvious weak links, but we all remember the game in 2013, where he went after Josh Robinson an awful lot. The Packers, I don't think, punted that night. And I can still remember the throw where Josh Robinson actually had pretty good coverage on Jordy Nelson, but gave up, I think, 5 inches on him. And Rodgers basically zinged the ball over the top of Robinson's head.
Yep.
And Robinson was pretty tight on him, but he just threw it over the top of him. And Jordy Nelson caught it for a touchdown. And one of those Rodgers throws where you're kind of like, I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do. But they have not had that type of guy where there's an obvious weak link in recent years as much. And I don't know that Jayron Kearse will. I mean, maybe he'll be fine and he'll hold his own. But I would think certainly they're going to try to test that theory fairly early in the game.
Who's Green Bay's slot receiver?
Well, the last time out, Geronimo Allison was the guy that got the most playing time in that spot, and we also saw Davante Adams there a little bit. Those are bigger guys, so he's not giving up size necessarily, in the sense of that he's 6'4", and those guys are 5'9", 5'10", and they're shifty. They're not those types of receivers, yeah. And the Packers don't have a ton of those types of receivers, but they are awfully good, and Davante Adams is, as a route runner, as good as they get. I mean, certainly in the neighborhood of what the Vikings have, but yeah, it's going to be difficult one way or the other, because you have to figure Rodgers is going to look at that and try to go after him.
My guess is, though, when Davante goes inside, my guess is we're going to see Xavier follow him.
Very possibly.
There. So I don't know how much you're going to see Jayron, or if Mike Hughes plays, how much you'd see him against Davante Adams, who's the clear Packers' number one target.
Hard to know what the defensive game plan is against Green Bay.
Right. Contain Aaron Rodgers, maybe.
Just that was a 2016 callback.
Oh, 2016, that's right.
Callback to this morning.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, 2016, Rogue One series.
Yeah.
That was the last time they lost to the Packers.
Did we ever decide if we liked Rogue One series better or the Mutiny on the Fox River?
I like Rogue One series because that was the time that movie came out, right? Star Wars,
yeah,
obviously.
Yeah, I think we settled on that. We liked that initially, but I've grown on Mutiny on the Fox River in recent years. I mean, they both work. I think at the time, maybe at the time it was because I was working at ESPN and I didn't need it. Not that Disney needs any help with cross promotion for Star Wars, but you know,
yeah.
The cross promotion for Star Wars was the order of the day.
I think you calling it that probably pushed that movie over.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, you know, little art house film that needed all the exposure it could get.
Low budget.
For those who don't recall, that 2016 game was the game that Terrence Newman decided, you know what, I'm not going to listen to Mike Zimmer, who wants Xavier Rhodes to shadow Jordy Nelson. I'm going to stay on my side of the field because I can cover Jordy Nelson. And Mike Zimmer and everybody came back and said that was just a miscommunication. Only happened for one series or two series. But Xavier
came back 2 days later and said that.
True, you're right.
The day of the game, Mike Zimmer brought it up.
You're right, he did. The day of the game, he brought it up. Xavier Rhodes kind of actually lied and made this story grander than it was. Basically, to my understanding, Xavier was trying to make it a group collective thing and not put it all on Terrence, and said, well, we all decided throughout the week we weren't going to do it. And then that made it sound worse than it actually was, which was just a veteran who was saying, no, my pride is hurt by you asking me to move.
Yeah.
I'm going to stay here. And so Xavier made it worse.
Well, and you remember, like, in the locker room, we were sitting there waiting to talk to Xavier, and like him and Captain Munnerlin were sitting there trying to basically get their story straight.
No, that was
Munnerlin pulled them aside.
Yeah, that was we'd approached Captain, and then I told Captain what I wanted to ask him about, and the Captain went, like, he turned like he saw a ghost.
Uh-oh.
Turns and then talks to Xavier and goes, yeah, they know, and we're going to have to get our story straight.
And Newman snuck out the back
door. I chased Terrence out of the locker room, and he just goes, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. And then we spent Christmas Day going back through the Zapruder film.
Yep.
And then the next day, the watchword was miscommunication.
Ever since, it's been hunky-dory for the Vikings against the Packers. It has been
3-0-1,
right, in the four matchups since. It's just that one was so catastrophically bad. And in that 2016 season that ended so poorly because they started 5-0, that was just the cap on it.
And I thought that specific moment, I thought, was part of the reason going into 2017 that I was so down on the Vikings. I was like, has Zimmer lost these guys? Is this kind of done? And they went 13-3.
That was the big narrative.
If we would have had a taco bet that year, I would have been blown out of the water. I was as down on the Vikings that year as I was going into this year, and now they're 1-0 and they look.
They are. Well, let's get a little bit more into the Packers defense versus the Vikings offense. We're going to see, like we talked about with the remade front for the Packers, that's going to test the offensive line, but the Packers' defensive backfield, their secondary, is also a lot better. Mike Zimmer brought up the fact that they liked Darnell Savage, the first-round safety the Packers drafted coming out of college. He also said the Vikings really liked J.R. Alexander, the first-round corner out of Louisville that the Packers drafted. I haven't heard Mike Zimmer say that about the 40 other first-round corners the Packers have taken in the last 10 years.
He wasn't a big Demaryius Randall guy?
I guess not. Or Ha-Ha Clinton Dix or any of these other guys.
The Packers executives after about a month and a half.
But
I did notice that. That was interesting.
Last 2 years, Mike Zimmer, I guess, has liked the guys the Packers are picking. That is a good sign if you're a Packers fan, because Mike Zimmer is known to get some pretty good defensive backs. So I think overall, Packers secondary is young, but they add Adrian Amos, who has that kind of game-sealing interception at the end of the game in Chicago against his former teammate Mitchell Trubisky. They add the veteran in Amos, and I think he's going to give them some good experience back there and help bring along the younger guys. And I think this Packers secondary is one that Cousins is not going to throw 425 yards against.
I wouldn't think so. I mean, it all, again, they've spent so much time this week talking about how this 10 passes was a one-off. You never know how the game is going to go, things like that. And again, it's only happened two other times in the last decade that a team has passed 10 or fewer times. So they're almost certainly correct. Mm. But the template we saw and kind of the blueprint that Mike Zimmer wants to use and everything we saw from these defenses and even offenses in week one does kind of lead you to think this is feeling like a game that could be in the mid-teens to 20, and it might be one of those Mike Zimmer first 1-20 kind of games that determines it.
This is a bit of an aside, but speaking of Packers defensive backs, do we remember back in 2012 the Packers picked Nick Perry 28th overall? They apparently liked Harrison Smith as well, but they passed on Harrison Smith for Nick Perry, and Harrison Smith went a pick later. So we've seen a lot of changes in that Packers secondary since then, but imagine if that had gone differently.
Oof. Well, Theodore Thompson wasn't too good at IDing those defensive backs, huh?
No. Well, I mean, he had a couple good ones there with Nick Collins and then getting as much as he got out of Charles Woodson. But
true.
That was a pretty big miss.
That was a bad one. That would have been a little bit different if Harrison Smith finds himself over there. The Vikings we should mention out of the Vikings defense, they've got a pretty good safety tandem right now. And I thought it was interesting how Mike Zimmer has discussed that Harrison Smith and Anthony Harris have kind of a rapport a little more than maybe, let's say, Andrew Sandejo and Harrison Smith did in terms of intellectually playing.
I can't imagine why it'd be hard to have a rapport with Andrew Sandejo.
In terms of intellectually playing off of each other, whereas Anthony's really good at IDing when Harrison's trying to trick an offense, and then he will lean into that and do things that make the offense try to buy it.
Such a lovely young man.
Tomas Sandejo?
Yeah.
Yeah, apparently his tenure in Philadelphia didn't go off to a good start. I heard he missed a tackle, got pulled. Yeah. Off to a bad start there. But Ben,
seems
what did you think?
Let's
talk about current Vikings. What did you think about the comments that Zimmer's had about these two safeties?
Well, I mean, we've done the game for an awfully long time of who's the guy that you can put next to Harrison Smith that can unlock Harrison Smith. In fact, Zimmer said it a couple of years ago at the combine.
For his guy. Yeah.
If Harrison has the right kind of safety next to him, he can be even better. And he got asked, is that safety on this roster? And I think he said, I don't know at that point. I think that was the year they signed Harris as an undrafted free agent. They certainly liked potentially what he could become. But, yeah, the fact that he's started to become a guy that can make plays in his own right. And we saw a lot of it with Smith on Sunday in terms of how much they sent him after the quarterback. They cranked it up a little more than they usually do. But we saw Smith near the line of scrimmage probably as much as we ever do, and they sent him after Matt Ryan a few different times. And the more trust you have in Anthony Harris to be able to hold things down to the back end, the more you can mix and match kind of where you put Harrison Smith.
And I think Zimmer's always wanted to use his safeties interchangeably.
Yeah.
He's always wanted them to be able to do all the things that one is asked to do as the other. But I think Anthony Harris is probably the best equipped to actually do that, whether it's in terms of being that center field guy or being an in-the-box kind of guy. Sandejo just always struck me as more of a box safety.
Yep.
Very hard hitter, over-the-middle kind of guy, blitzer, but not necessarily the guy you're going to want to be a ball hawk in coverage. The play that Anthony made on Julio for that interception was just phenomenal.
Yeah.
To the point where when we saw it live, you thought, oh, they're doubling Julio Jones.
Yeah.
It's just that's how it viewed. And Harris goes, no, I just reacted that quickly to my assignment blocking, and I was able to get back and get on Julio. I never saw another Viking safety but Harrison Smith make that play in this regime.
No, and the second pick was athletically – just as good.
Right.
I mean, the first one certainly, yeah, the way he diagnosed it and went to the spot that he got to was awfully impressive. But the second one, it looked almost like Matt Ryan was trying to throw a corner route for his tight end who kind of stopped on the route. Harris basically said, hey, yeah, I'll finish that route for you. I mean, it almost looked like Harris was the receiver running the corner route and getting the ball high in the back of the end zone. But yeah, and a pretty impressive athletic play on that one and an awfully good job of diagnosing it on the first one. So, yeah, I mean, if you have a guy like that, I mean, he has been a guy that when he's had playing time, he has made some awfully big plays. And now that he's the unquestioned starter, he'll certainly have more chances to do that.
Grain of salt with this, of course, but I believe he was their highest graded player on defense last year in Pro Football Focus.
Yeah.
The whole year last year?
Yeah.
That second safety always seems to get –
Right.
Pretty high grades.
And it was only half
them.
The year, basically.
I mean, I don't know how Danielle Hunter can't be the highest graded guy every single year. Yeah.
Understood. But
their grades do seem to end up with the safety that ends up not in pass coverage as much because Harrison Smith has to take on more of the difficult assignments, I think has tended to land with pretty good grades from Pro Football Focus a number of times.
Yeah, moral of the story, that he was good. Yeah, he was good last year. He was good last year. He had made the nine starts when he took over once Sandejo got injured. Then, yeah, had a great day in his 10th start next to Harrison
NFC
on Sunday.
Defensive Player of the Week.
Thanks for telling me.
Fourth year in a row they've had the NFC Defensive Player of the Week in week one.
No, it was, I got misled by the
fourth time overall.
2 years ago, it was Sam Bradford. So it's NFL. And they had a player of the week for four straight openers. Because at first I thought that too. It was like, if it was all defense, that's pretty impressive. It was just three out of the four defensive guys. So not as impressive. Mike Zimmer's got to step it up. It's really not that impressive. let's talk about the kicking specialists, kickers, before we transition to Twitter questions. A year later, the Vikings have stuck by Dan Bailey, the guy they signed the week after this game. Jettisoned Daniel Carlson, who will be returning to US Bank Stadium next week with the Oakland Raiders. Mike, just what was your initial impressions of seeing Dan Bailey sink all four extra points?
I mean, a quiet day from the Vikings kicking game was probably exactly what they wanted. I mean, there was very little. I mean, four extra points, they looked smooth. I mean, there was not any of them that were like, ooh, that just barely made it. They looked like good, like professional kicks. So
but each time you're holding your breath, right? I mean, I can't imagine what fans were thinking.
You're
what's
this going to be like? He looked good. You know, it definitely looked like the right week one decision when Kari Vidvik missed a field goal and an extra point and his only two kicks for the Jets, and they lost by a point, and now he's released. So that's fun.
They can get him back.
They can get him back to the practice squad.
They open up a spot probably for Brandon Tillon on the practice squad, but if you want another guy.
But I guess it was, for all of the tumultuousness, I mean, people were maybe griping on Twitter that Colquitt outkicked his coverage a few times, but I don't know if he did or if that's just that coverage was – I don't know what they were trying to do there, but there were some returns that were possible there. But otherwise, the kicking game – seemed fine, and that's probably all you can ask for, especially given what has transpired pretty much ever since a year ago.
Yeah.
At this point.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see if that holds up.
Yeah, I talked to Dan Bailey before that game for a season preview thing, and he had said, look, are there days I wanted to burn from camp? Absolutely, I wish I could get rid of those. But he felt like, at least with Colquitt in there, that was the best possible option, was to get a 34-year-old veteran, a guy who had done it before, not a young guy like Matt Weil, who was learning how to hold field goals from last year, all those kinds of things. So they ended up with Colquitt. They ended up, if they had to give up some decent punting to get him, if that meant getting a sure holder for their field goal operation, I would have to say it's probably worth it from a team perspective.
And they blocked a punt for the first time in 5 years, right? So that was a tone setter, gave him the short field, gave him a 7-0 early lead. So
Eric Wilson might be their next Pro Bowl receiver.
The special teams debut, I guess, of Marwan Maalouf was couldn't have really asked for much more.
Yeah, their first full game, anyway, first game of the first season without Marcus Sherrills wasn't without a hiccup, because Chad Beebe said afterward he had three fair catches, and he said afterward the coaches got on him because there were a couple he should have returned where he had room, and he just said, I was doing my first job, which is securing the football. It'll be interesting to see once Chad Beebe does get a return, how long they stick with him. I thought it was weird. They're trying Mike Hughes in practices on punt returns.
Yeah.
With that brace still on his surgically repaired left knee, Mike Hughes has yet to come back. Maybe it's just to get him comfortable with the process during practices and not actually put him out there in games. But for a guy coming off that injury, I mean,
given their cornerback depth, I would not do that at all.
Yeah.
No,
why?
Thanks.
It's an interesting choice if they in games would consider that.
Yeah, and it would seem, if they're thinking about that, that they're optimistic about his chances of returning fairly soon, which I think is the case anyway.
There's a chance.
There's a chance. There's always a chance.
All right, guys. Well, should we get to...
It's just too pessimistic is what it comes down to. You got to believe there's a chance.
Let's get to some Twitter questions. We got about...
That's all it is, just optimism. Happy, sunny guy. That's all it is.
10 to 12 minutes. This is what the NFL season does. It just beats the beat reporters down. And we're only week two, Ben. We're only in week two.
We're not, though. We've been here since the end of July.
That is true. All right. We've got a question from a business, VIP concierge business. Must be into fantasy football. Wants to know, what percentage of running back touches do you anticipate Cook getting versus the rest of the backfield in the Packers game and moving forward? So, Dalvin Cook.
Playing a little DFS, are we?
Yeah, clearly. Dalvin Cook, if we can just talk about it in general, I guess. A year ago, this is where Dalvin Cook got hurt, but it was only his 13th touch that he got injured on in overtime. He's going to get a lot more touches on Sunday, probably, right?
I would think.
So, where do you see this kind of setup going? Is it more? It seems like it's a 75-25 or almost 80-20 split here with Alexander Mattison after one game. Mike, what do you think?
It seemed like Mattison probably carried, what, 9 times? It's probably because they ran it so much in terms of, like, total volume versus what Cook had, 21?
And a lot of Mattison's carries, at least, like, 3 or 4 of them were at the very end.
Exactly. So, I think, like, in terms of that, I mean, they did, I can't remember if it was the third series, but they gave Mattison one of those kind of, I think it was the third series, and then kind of towards the end. So it probably just to spell him, he looked pretty good. We had 49 yards on those 9 carries. I can't remember if it was you or you that pointed it out that there was still some, I think it was your in your second day post, which was interesting, that
a lot of stuff
aside from all of the, you know, explosive plays, there were still a lot of those 0-1-2 that you want to avoid, because that's going to get you eventually into some 3rd and 7s and
phantom feast.
But overall, it's kind of picking at nits with the running game that produced so well. But it seems like that's probably a pretty logical split, enough to keep him fresh, but that Cook is the clear workhorse.
And he looks special when he did get that room, as you mentioned. Ben, it wasn't all the time with that offensive line up front, but it seemed like the run blocking was there a little bit, even with Irv Smith getting involved. I think Adam Thielen threw a good run block on one of his bigger runs as well.
CJ Ham,
very, very involved. So I think you're going to see Dalvin Cook very much continue to dominate those touches in the backfield. All right, guys, got another question.
Nathan wants to know, we know that Kubiak advises Stefanski on play calling, but does he also advise Zimmer on what he sees opposing offenses doing?
I mean, I don't know.
At his own peril?
Sure. Well, I don't know. I don't know for sure if he's doing that, but I do think that, as we've heard Zimmer talk about coaching philosophy, I do think he values the input of guys on the other side of the ball. I mean, one of the things he talked about with Garrett Bradbury was that Andre Patterson came into his office while he was studying film. I thought he said maybe Clemson's defensive line, and then kind of said, hey, there's this guy from North Carolina State that we want to take a look at too. So I think any and all input like that is valued. And I think Zimmer has said before that one of the values that he can provide to offensive coaches and vice versa is, if I'm attacking you, this is how I'm going to do it. So I would especially think this week when, as Zimmer said, that what the Packers are running is awfully similar to what the Vikings want to do, I would think that the closest thing you're going to have to getting in the mind of Matt LaFleur is a lot of the people in your own building, including Gary Kubiak and including the quarterback who has played for him in the past.
Yeah, LaFleur was a quality control coach with the Texans, right?
Yeah.
08-09, that was under Gary Kubiak, picked up some things there. And, of course, for 4 years worked in Washington where Sean McVay was a coordinator. And, of course, as you said, Kirk Cousins being a quarterback. So a lot of the similarities there between the two offenses and going back to Kubiak. I'm sure he does. I don't know. Yeah, we haven't asked Gary this, but as Ben said, I'm sure he does advise him because Zimmer appreciates those kinds of things. And I remember hearing last year Zimmer talking about in the offseason before things went south with John DeFilippo that John did advise him a lot on how the RPOs got the better of the Vikings defense in that NFC Championship game. So if he's listening to a OC that he fired, I imagine he's listening to Gary Kubiak.
Interesting to know if it happens at all in-game or not, I guess would be the
question. Oh, is that the question?
No, but that's my follow-up question.
Like, yeah, maybe. Maybe.
Would that even happen, or is it too fast at that point?
All right, me you. Lee's got a question. He said, could we possibly see Elflein? Yep. Could we possibly see Elflein being benched for Brett Jones?
Well, if he's not healthy.
But I don't think it's going to be Brett Jones.
Jones hasn't played guard for the Vikings in a long time.
Dozier was the guy we saw today. That would be the name to keep in mind, I think.
Brett Jones has been at center pretty much the entire offseason, and he still was today at the beginning of practice when we saw him after getting re-signed.
Yeah, they cut him and they brought him back, right? Was that a vested veteran kind of thing where they don't have to?
Yeah, I think that was the gist of it.
Yeah, so now his salary is not guaranteed. I think it's like an $800,000 salary or something, not guaranteed for the rest of the year. We'll have to play it week to week with Brett, but he provides good depth there at center. And I think that's kind of where he's at. If Elflein can't play, then Sunday your backup center will be Brett Jones. But your starting left guard will most likely be Dakota Dozier. I don't know if Jones has the mobility they're looking for in a guard. I don't know Dakota's game as well enough either to say if he does. But Jones is, from what I've seen from this staff, at least in their practices, Jones isn't even an option at guard right now.
It'll be interesting to, I mean, if it is Dozier, and even if it's not, I mean, given the struggles that Elflein had in pass protection at times on Sunday, that side of the line I think is going to be worth watching, because as much trouble as Grady Jarrett gave them, I mean, Kenny Clark certainly could be a big headache for them as well.
I was going to say, was Elflein bad enough, or is he questionable enough at that spot to begin with that they'd be thinking about this move even if he was healthy?
I wouldn't think so. I thought he had a pretty good day,
right?
Getting the second level, he had a number of impressive blocks. Yeah,
that's kind of his game.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to give up on a third-round pick that quickly. And especially two games into this new spot at left guard where he's at, I just don't envision that happening. They're going to take some lumps with him, though. That's the same with everybody, though. It's not like Josh Klein was perfect. Garrett Bradbury had a very up-and-down day against the Falcons. And we talk about Grady Jarrett getting after him. It was mainly after Garrett Bradbury. And Garrett doesn't anchor that well, can get pushed back into the pocket kind of easily, and so that's going to be one of the things he has to work on. But overall, that entire interior needs to get better, and I wouldn't be so down on Pat Elflein as Twitter seems to be. All right, let's move on to another question. We got Johnny, another running back question. He says, with the versatility of Alexander Mattison and Cook, could you envision them using both running backs at the same time as they've done in previous years?
Both of Mattison and Cook
at the same time.
Yeah, he said it's because like two running back sets. I mean, mainly we're talking about C.J. Ham being the fullback in front of a running back. I don't think once they had both of them on the field against the Falcons, I don't know if we would see that at all.
No, I don't think that's necessarily the approach. I mean, I think you're going to see two running backs. Certainly with C.J. Ham being the second one, we saw a lot of that on Sunday. I think C.J. Ham played more snaps on Sunday than he did at any point last year. Mm. And, probably that's true going back a year, too. So, yeah, I think if you're C.J. Ham, you're going to have a lot more to do this year than you have in the past.
Those key with the two-back sets is, I mean, that one guy's got to be the lead blocker, so you have that option in the play fake. Whereas if you have Madison as your lead blocker, no defense is going to be like, watch out for Madison, he's the lead blocker. Like, no one's going to be scared of that. So I think with that, it's tough to have both of those guys on the field at the same time unless it's a pure passing one. If you're talking about, like, lining those guys both out up wide and having them be receivers, I guess I could see that.
I'm trying to remember if, like, in 2017, if they ever used, like, Latavius Murray and Jerick McKinnon in the same formations.
I mean, McKinnon his skill would have been
different.
A slot.
Yeah,
his skill set. Sometimes they did that, where they motioned McKinnon out a little bit. But
it doesn't seem like the way this offense is constructed or what they want to do that would be an alignment they would be in.
All right, we got any more questions, guys?
HVAC repairman says no questions. He's here for farm impersonations.
I was waiting to end on that one.
Binford wanted to know which Viking can eat the most tacos, which is a natural segue into the updated taco standings.
Isn't it obviously Linval Joseph?
It seems like it would be, but it's not always the biggest guy that eats the most tacos.
As Mike Rand wants it.
As the Kobayashis of the world will tell you. By the way, did you see there was a guy that like died in a taco eating competition like a month ago?
I'd read about that, but didn't he choke? It wasn't like a matter
of the dog
of,
in the fight. It's the size of the fight in the dog.
Or the size of the throat. Yeah, I think he choked to death. So.
Yeah, he did choke to death. It wasn't the tacos that got him. It was the pace of the eating.
Especially if it was hard shot.
It could be someone sneaky. It could be like an offensive lineman. Those guys got to put on weight. Like the offensive linemen don't want weight necessarily.
I mean, Brian O'Neill was eating like 4,000 calories a day to try to put on weight.
6,000, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean,
that's a lot of tacos.
Yeah.
Could he put down some tacos in there?
He was eating a pint of ice cream a night and waking up at the middle of the night to eat.
Kirk Cousins and maybe like cheat day 6 out of 7. might be able to throw down some tacos. I don't know.
I mean,
he wasn't particularly.
Can we talk
busy.
About this
he
for
might,
a second?
He might be. Might not have been. He wasn't particularly busy Sunday. He might have had time for tacos on the sidelines.
For a guy that has aligned himself in the Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, sort of super strict, smart eating in your 30s camp. I mean, we've heard about the State Fair. We've heard about Shake Shack. He's doing Pizza Ranch commercials.
We got the other favorite restaurant. The Pizza Ranch one is the one that's real.
Portillo's.
Yeah. The Pizza Ranch one's the real head scratcher. Like, I don't know what the greater New England equivalent of Pizza Ranch is, but I imagine that Tom Brady is not
doing commercials for that.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it'd be like going to Dunkin' Donuts or something. But
I guess, but he's got. It seems like he's got a lot of cheat days, which is you
yeah.
know,
I mean,
fine,
more power to
fine.
You.
That's
if
fine.
You can get away with it.
All right, Ben, I found what I was talking about. This is a transcript of Brett Favre talking about Antonio Brown. I want you to read the middle paragraph, I think. And then we'll
reading?
Yeah, we can close. Actually, no, read the no, that's a long one. Read the first paragraph because he's got quite the metaphor in there in the middle or at the end. Just the first paragraph.
Just the first paragraph.
Yeah, this is Brett Favre talking about on Sirius XM radio about Antonio Brown.
I mean, if anyone is equipped to bring in a player in a similar situation as Antonio Brown and make it work, it's the New England Patriots. Now, I'll be honest with you. If you watch the game the other night, they don't need him. In fact, I think it almost creates a problem by trying to figure out how to keep him happy and play him and quiet. So if you say, well, let's just put him in on third downs and that doesn't work, you're trying to, as Mike Holmgren used to say, it's like trying to pound sand.
No, you can't. No, come on.
I broke. I pulled the Jimmy Fallon. You made a career out of this. All right, I'll put it back together.
You got this, Ben.
I'll get it.
You got this.
you're trying to, as Mike Holmgren used to say, it's like trying to pound sand up a flea's ass. Pardon my French.